Welcome back in, everyone, to a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are excited to be bringing you another show that is happening at the Tank here in New York. And what an incredible show it is. Joining us to talk to us about this show, we've got the director, playwright, and performer, Venora Epp. She's joining us to talk about her show, Orlando, A Rhapsody, which is playing April 17th through the 24th at The Tank, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. We are so excited about this show. We can't wait to share it with you, and let's just go ahead and welcome on our guests so we can get to it. Venora, welcome to Whisper in the Wing from Stage
Thank
Whisper.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm so excited that you're here. I am excited to dive more into this piece for, you know, based on what it's based on or inspired by, the Virginia Woolf book, you know, the fact that this is a father-daughter team. I mean, all of this sounds amazing. So could we start by having you tell us a bit about what Orlando, A Rhapsody is about?
Absolutely. So it's this theater piece that I started working on about 2 years ago with my father, who is an experienced theater actor from Minneapolis, but now in recent years, he's been based in Brooklyn. And so let's see, I'm a young theater artist based in Paris myself, and I got this idea that I wanted to put something together with my dad. And I had fallen in love kind of with the writing of Virginia Woolf from reading A Room of One's Own and then Orlando, a biography. So I got this idea about putting it all kind of together. And so we started working on an adaptation from the book Orlando, a biography. But as we were working, we kind of started pulling a lot of threads from just other material and other kind of desires that we had of things to put on stage. And so we've come up with this sort of hybrid piece that is both, it's both very much Virginia Woolf's novel, but then it also kind of takes on a life of its own. And so it's very much about, it's about gender and it's about fiction is what I say, because it's about both writing, but it's also about what it is to be an actor and theater. So within the theme of fiction, I put kind of all different forms of fiction, I guess. So that's what I can say to start off.
That's amazing, yeah. Though. I love that. So we've kind of touched on what the show is about, but there was an interesting thing that you shared with me before we started this interview. You'd emailed me this, and I just want to read what you wrote. Your show, Orlando, A Rhapsody, is based on Orlando, a biography, like you mentioned. It's an adventurous novel written by feminist author Virginia Woolf, which recounts the life of Orlando, who lives 300 years and moves from one gender to the other. Because it is so resonant to today's world, the novel is currently being adapted in many theaters across the states as well as abroad. I mean, we just saw a similar version of this in production of Pericles at Classic Stages, performed by Fiasco Theater. So you and your father now are taking the story and you're doing an experimental autobiographical take on it, which is absolutely incredible. But is there a particular inspiration that, you know, made you want to do this piece?
Yeah, so it's a really personal piece. I think maybe, you know, often when you put together your first piece of art, it has to come from a very, you know, almost autobiographical place or something like that. At least that's how I feel. I've always felt that it's hard to write things for me personally that aren't somehow rooted in my own life in a certain way. So I guess the inspiration from this show has a lot to do with the fact that I grew up in the theater company that my father was a part of, and that life within the theater has sort of been my whole world forever in a certain way. And so the inspiration from the show is very much this kind of desire to sort of revisit now as an adult artist, what is that like artistic world that I was raised and grew up in? And so how to kind of dialogue today with that part of my history, I guess. That's kind of the more like material sort of inspiration and sort of, you know, why do a piece with my father and things like that. And then I guess the other side of the inspiration is just from Virginia Woolf herself. I think when I first read A Room of One's Own, that had a huge effect on me because it kind of opened up my mind. It was sort of my initiation into feminism in a lot of ways. And yet I also find that Virginia Woolf, beyond just her feminist writing, is also just an incredible poet and is very funny. And so right away, I sort of thought that her spirit really spoke to me on a lot of different levels and was really something that I wanted to sort of live in on stage.
That is amazing. So, turning to focus on this upcoming production here in New York, what has it been like developing this iteration of it?
Yeah, so basically, I came to my dad like 2 years ago saying, okay, I think it would be interesting for us to try doing something together. And I think Virginia Woolf is the right material for us. And we started meeting sometimes over Zoom. And also, like, whenever I would come home for a visit, things like that, we would have these meetings where we'd talk about it. We were both reading a bunch of Virginia Woolf's books. And we started sort of taking the books apart and putting them back together and making these adaptations that we would just sort of send to each other back and forth while I was in Paris and he was in Minneapolis. And then from there, we finally did our first actual residency a little over a year ago in February in Brooklyn at a place called Triskelion Arts. And we spent about a week just sort of really writing and really like doing kind of what you call like table work. And out of that, we did a first kind of staged reading of where we were at with some friends and colleagues and got some feedback. And then Steve came here to France last June, and we did a 10-day kind of staged residency of putting what we had worked on, what we had been writing and conceiving in our brains, trying to put it on our feet. And then we decided that we were going to try to take it to New York. So we were so thrilled to have gotten picked up by the Tank for this short run. And since we found that out like last December. And so for the past couple of months, we've been once again sort of rewriting what we have, where we've gotten to from these different residencies we've been doing. And we've had along the way, each time we've been able to do a residency and do a little showing of it, we've always gotten feedback from family, friends, any audience members who are able to see it. And so sort of from those accumulated experiences, we sort of knew what we wanted to sort of rethink within the piece. And so we've been able to do that just long distance. Steve and I have been, I call him Steve when I talk about the project, even though he's my dad. I can't really say dad when I'm talking about it in work. But Steve and I have, we've just been meeting over Zoom once a week for the past like month and a half, just rewriting and rewriting and rewriting and rereading. And so last week we finally got to sort of a final version of the script that feels like it's really what we want it to be. So yeah, that's where we're at so far in the development of it. We'll have about a week when I get to New York. I get to New York next week, and we'll have a week of rehearsal before we get to open at the Tank.
Exciting! How exciting!
Mm-hmm.
Now, with this piece that you're putting together, is there a message or a thought you hope audiences take away from the show?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think, I don't know if I would ever say that I would want a message that could be necessarily put into one phrase or into one word. And I wouldn't necessarily want to dictate it to the audience. I know a lot of what I have in mind in terms of what the piece means to me. I mean, as I was saying earlier, it's we're kind of the main themes that emerged to me from the piece are gender and fiction. So I think it's inviting everybody to sort of think about gender as performative material. Think about the fact that, gender is not necessarily, it's a construct. And so we're kind of playing with it on stage to sort of also invite the audience to perceive it in that way also. It's interesting because we had a final line of the show that was a little bit of a message. It was a little bit of like a punchline. And actually last week while we were meeting and rewriting, I decided to take that line out because I thought, I don't want to close down like the meaning of the show so much. I don't want to narrow it down so much. I think we have enough sort of ideas and sort of poetry within the show that I would want the audience to be able to write that phrase, that final punchline. I would like them to write it for themselves out of what they've received throughout the whole piece. But yeah, I think throughout, I mean, in spite of that, there's certainly many feminist messages, I would say, and certainly that are addressed not only to women themselves or women identifying people themselves. That's what I would say.
That is really fantastic. I love that idea. And it's a great lead into the last question I want to ask on this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to Orlando, a Rhapsody?
I think that is also a really great question. I mean, I would obviously, of course, my first answer would be I would like everyone to have access to it. I think what's great about the tank to start off with is just that they do allow a pretty accessible ticket range, and we have like a pay-as-you-can kind of setup for tickets. And so that is really important to me, is that it doesn't feel like inaccessible just economically to come to the show. I think that often, sometimes I think theater pieces that are very poetic or quite like experimental sometimes can be called elitist. And I think often they can be. But I think that often, if they're done in the right way, sometimes the most poetic and experimental theater can also speak really broadly. And so that is something that I feel very strongly about the work that I do. I mean, I do a lot of work in France that is almost more, how would you say, almost more like a social justice kind of theater that's like really trying to more frontally address certain like social issues. Whereas this piece, I think, is working on a slightly different playing field. But I don't think that means that it would be less accessible or less necessary. That's what I would hope. And actually, what was fantastic was that in August, last August, Steve and I presented for one night, we did a showing of Orlando, a Rhapsody as a work in progress when we were in Minneapolis, which is the city where my parents have lived until they moved to Brooklyn 2 years ago, and it's where the city where I grew up. And it's a city that has a fantastic theater scene. And so we did a showing one night of our work to show it to all of our good friends and artistic community in Minneapolis, and also a lot of our family. And I was really curious how that evening was going to go when we were there. And we had about 100 people, and it was very different. You know, we had, yeah, as I said, we had a lot of theater artists there, but then we also had a lot of just family members. I mean, I had my cousins were there who are 16 and 18 years old, my grandma, some, you know, second cousins and everything. And so these are people who have often come to see theater, but they're not themselves artists. I don't know. I mean, of course, you know, they're cultivated in their own levels, but it's not like they're not like regular theater goers or something. And so I didn't know how, you know, how is this piece going to be received by these people who are very dear to me. And it was a really moving and wonderful surprise to see that I felt like they really engaged with it. And my cousins, yeah, who are 16 and 18 years old, were just like really excited about it. And my grandma came right up to me afterwards and she said, "I got everything. I got it all," you know. And that just really meant a lot to me, because I think, yeah, when you're working on experimental sort of strange genre bending art, it does also really mean a lot when it can come through to people who aren't just other artists. So, yeah.
Well, on the second part of our interview, we love to give our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Well, let's see. I mean, I have to say that actually, I think, I mean, as I was saying earlier, the Orlando Rhapsody is a piece that is very like personal to me. So I think a lot of the references and things that were within the show are also just things that are deeply ingrained in my universe, my artistic world, my imagination, I guess. So Virginia Woolf has been, yeah, I think she's been one of the most important authors to me in the past 5 years of my life. Not only Orlando, a biography, her book, but I think The Waves is probably my favorite book these days, at least. Also, Donna Haraway is a very important feminist philosopher. She was very inspirational to the piece, Landor Rhapsody, but she's also just been sort of on my nightstand for the past couple of years. She's a really wild sort of, I mean, she mixes both like science fiction and feminist philosophy and ecology, and she's got all sorts of wild ideas about sort of how we humans could place ourselves differently in the universe. And I really love her for that. And let's see, I'd also say, I think in terms of another huge thing that's a very big, another really big inspiration for me artistically is in recent years, I've started doing a lot of traditional polyphony music, Gregorian chant, but also Corsican polyphony, and also more like English, Irish traditional music has been really influential to me. I recommend this beautiful Irish band that's called Lancum, Lankum. They do gorgeous work that's both, it's like very contemporary music, but it's also really rooted in Irish tradition. And I love any kind of art that can kind of like bend the, like any sort of historical notions. So that's what I've really been enjoying when I've been practicing this like old traditional kind of polyphony that's like, I mean, it's music from like the Middle Ages, but to me, it like creates a kind of emotion that doesn't feel old at all. It feels actually very present and almost rebellious in a certain way, because it's all about like sort of just creating beautiful vibrations, I guess. And let's see, what else could I say? Other theatrical artists that have been really important to me recently are, there's an American choreographer whose name is Trejal Harel. I believe some of his work has come to New York recently. He's based in Europe, but he is an incredibly beautiful artist and innovator who does work that's like feels very, I mean, he roots a lot of his practice in like voguing or in almost like runway walks and things like that. But to me, there's also something in his work that reminds me a lot of just like a child doing a play in their living room for their parents. And as somebody who grew up doing theater in my living room for my parents, that's something that's really moving to me.
That's a wonderful list. I love that. Some names I have to go and look into now because it sounds
Yeah.
fantastic. Have you had the chance to see any great theater lately that you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I guess actually I almost sort of bled into that question earlier just now when I was talking about Trejal Harel, this choreographer who's been a really great influence to me. It's a little bit difficult for me to answer that question because a lot of the theater that I've seen lately is happening over here. I mean, this is I live here in Paris, so a lot of the theater over here isn't necessarily getting brought to the States. But Trejal Harel is somebody who's, I know his work has often been in New York. Gisèle Vienne also is a very important choreographer and theater artist who's come to the States also on several occasions. And then, I mean, one of the greatest things that I saw last week was at the Comédie Française in Paris. It's a show called The Silence, and it's a show where there are no words spoken the entire time. And it's done by some of the, it's kind of like the National Theater in France. That's one of the most prestigious houses. And I don't even really know how to put it into words because there aren't any words for it because there were no words in the show, but it was a gorgeous piece. Yeah.
That sounds incredible, though. What beautiful art you're getting to take in. And that kind of snowballs into my next question, which is, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I often think that, like, it's funny because since I grew up or in and around theater has sort of always been in my world. I didn't like, I don't, I can't tell the story of like the first time that I ever saw a play or the first time that I sort of discovered the magic of theater because I was lucky enough to have it around me from my very early childhood. And so I often think that maybe a part of my desire to do theater or my need for theater even is because I have always had it be a part of my world. And when I was little, my brothers and sisters and I, we used to always just hang out around the rehearsals or around, before the show, we would be backstage goofing around with the other actors or, even like helping them put on their costumes or their makeup or things like that. And so to me, the whole part that was almost even more magical than actually watching the shows was being a part of everything that was happening in preparing them. And so I think also I've often said that maybe there's like a part of like the world or the life of just a theater company and being in the physical building of a theater that to me feels, it's almost like maybe that's more why I'm there than for the actual art itself. Or maybe the art itself is about the whole life of it, if that makes sense. But I have to say that I'm lucky enough here in France to work with many groups, companies that are also good friends of mine and who are my peers. And so I think that that whole sort of community and artistic community and also just the almost a family, an artistic family, is I think my favorite part, the most important part to me in theater.
That's a lovely answer. That is a brilliant answer.
Thank
And now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory?
I will have to say that the first thing that came to me when I thought about that question was, so I was telling the story earlier of performing in Minneapolis this summer for this showing that we did of Orlando Rhapsody. And it was a really wild night for me, particularly because I was getting to perform for the first time for a lot of people that I have known my entire life, but who I have never gotten to perform for because I did all my training and I do all my work in France. And so, for instance, my grandma has never been able to travel to France to see the work that I do. And so that night in Minneapolis, she was in the second row and I was able to perform for her for the first time in my life. And there is a certain line in the show in Orlando Rhapsody. I don't want to spoil too much, but there's a moment where we use this material that's from A Room of One's Own. And it's a story that Virginia Woolf wrote where she imagines the life of an imaginary sister of Shakespeare. So she's imagining what it would have been like if a woman had the exact same talent as Shakespeare, but at Shakespeare's time would never have been able to become the genius that and the celebrity that Shakespeare was. And so there's a line in there where, when I'm telling that story in the piece, there's a line where I say, she was as adventurous, as imaginative, as agog to see the world as Shakespeare was, but she was not sent to school. And it turns out that actually my grandmother herself, when she was young, she started studying at the university. And then her younger brother graduated from high school. And her father informed her, my grandmother, that she was going to have to drop out of college because there wasn't enough money to pay for both children's education. And so she had to drop out of college to let her brother, who was a boy, study. And that's always something, that's always a story that's stuck with me. Turns out that my grandma, much later, when her children were out of the house, she went back and finished her degree. So that's something that I've always been really proud of her for. But yeah, anyway, so this line about she was as adventurous, as imaginative, as agog to see the world as her brother was, but she was not sent to school. It was wild because when I said that, I made eye contact with my grandmother who was in the second row. And it was just one of those kind of cosmic moments where something that's happening on stage sort of aligns with an actual true story. And it felt like there was some kind of really beautiful, maybe, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say some kind of reparation, but maybe that could have helped her, my grandma, find some kind of peace in some way.
What a wonderful memory. What a wonderful thought. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, are there any other projects or productions that you have coming on the pipeline we might be able to plug for you?
Well, unfortunately, Orlando Rhapsody is the only thing that I have that's going on in the States. This week, I'm in Saint-Étienne, which is a smaller town in France, and I'm performing The Misanthrope, which is a play by Molière. It's one of his last plays, and it's a very beautiful play. So I'm lucky enough to be performing that this week with a group of very good friends of mine, and we're having a great run so far. I have another project in the works, but it's going to take a while before it's up and running. And I, because on the side, besides theater, I love baking sourdough bread. That's something that became really important to me, like many people during the pandemic. And I have this idea about like creating a sort of solo piece about sourdough. And so that's something that I want to keep developing. I've started writing a little bit, but yeah, who knows? Maybe in a year or two I'll be back at the tank with a piece about sourdough. We'll see.
It's currently in the starter form, and then it'll start to rise, and we'll get it from there. I love
Exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Well, that leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Orlando, A Rhapsody, or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Yeah, all there's some great info on the Tank website, and then that's where you can find tickets. You can also follow me on Instagram. You can find me at my name is on Instagram is Vinor, Vinor dot PP.
Wonderful. Lenore, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by and speak with me about this fabulous new show coming in New York and just all the wonderful thoughts and ideas you shared. This was such a wonderful conversation. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. My guest today has been the playwright, director, and performer Vinora Epp, whose new show, Orlando, A Rhapsody, is coming to New York April 17th through the 24th. It's playing at the Tank, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you head to thetanknyc.org and get your tickets for this fabulous new work, Orlando, A Rhapsody, playing April 17th through the 24th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a staged whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.
Broadway, Paris, where I don't care.